Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The race to the White House is entering its final stages with just one day to go until Election Day. Immigration has become a central issue in the race. We've been speaking to Andrew Selly, the president of the Migration Policy Institute.
The two candidates have diametrically different ideas about immigration. Kamala Harris is, of course, the daughter of two immigrants, one from Jamaica, one from India, is proud of that heritage, always talks about immigration as an asset to American society. Donald Trump talks about immigration and immigrants as a poison seeping into American society.
Angry residents of one of the towns worst hit by the flooding in Spain have pelted the country's king with mud. He was visiting Pai Porta in Valencia. Kemi Badenoch is set to begin naming her shadow cabinet ahead of its first meeting tomorrow. And Quincy Jones, the US music titan who worked with the likes of Michael Jackson, Frank Sinatra and Ray Charles, has died at the age of 91. From Radio News Hub, I'm Edward Breslin.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love said to me, rip up the charades, forget about the telly, let's play scratch cards. Coins out to stretching, everybody laughing, better not be cheating, and the chance to win a pound or three.
Add some play to Christmas with scratch cards from the National Lottery. Please gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players and gifters must be 18 or over.
And the chance to win a pound or three.
Coming up, metaphorically speaking.
The NHS is encouraging people to call 999 at the first sign of a stroke, even if it doesn't seem like much. Like not being able to raise your arm, or struggling to smile, or slurring when you speak. Stroke symptoms can be less dramatic, painful, or obvious than you might expect. But even if it doesn't seem like it, any sign of a stroke is always an emergency, so call 999 immediately. And if you need an interpreter, tell the ambulance service when you call. Every minute is vital. Acting fast on any sign of a stroke gives stroke patients faster access to specialist treatment that can be life-saving and could reduce the long-term effects such as disability. Act fast. Face or arm or speech. At the first sign, it's time to call 999. Visit nhs.uk/act-fast for more information.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Colorful.
Delia. Colorful
Radio.
Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with me, Delia Delore. If you've not heard of the show before, welcome and get ready to learn with us as we delve into popular mottos, mantras and metaphors. We trace their origins and find how they translate to everyday life. Each week we have a guest who resonates with their chosen expression. When I heard what this week's metaphor would be, I immediately saw myself as a young child, literally kicking the can down the road. And it stirred up so many memories for me, but I didn't realize until hearing the metaphor how important that metaphor was to me. It is, of course, to kick the can down the road. Our guest this week is Lolette Hudson, FRSA. She is the CEO and founder of One Hand Can't Clap, one of the UK's leading learning and development enterprises, set up in 2000 to build exceptional leaders, preserve culture heritage, and improve productivity in organizations and small businesses. She's also recognized as a multi-award-winning entrepreneur, inventor, executive leadership transition coach, and an international speaker. Her work with senior African and African Caribbean leaders and entrepreneurs to develop their leadership potential has produced a powerful and substantial alumni. Today's episode will discuss an idiom that I think many people can relate to: kicking the can down the road. The phrase has a long history and has been labelled as being one with a frustrating meaning. In an article from Gramophobia, the phrase kicking the can down the road was first discovered in the 1930s, according to a search of newspaper and literary databases. It could have come from the popular children's game Kick the Can. The game is played with a kickable object, usually a discarded empty can, sometimes with rocks inserted for noise. The game was a popular pickup game during difficult economic times. For the sake of our metaphor, the can isn't the game. It could be anything from a deadline you've been ignoring for weeks, a piece of homework you've had for months, to that annoying friend or relative you've been ignoring who's asking you for something. Why do we use the phrase kick the can down the road? We mostly use it subconsciously, but there are deeper meanings deriving from that action. And when we use it consciously, it could take on a more positive meaning. We could think of the term as one that procrastinates. Seriously, what's the point of putting off whatever it is? There's no real benefit to doing it. In fact, the situation gets worse the longer you don't deal with it. Think about it. When you finally catch up with that annoying relative who's been blowing up your phone for the past month, apart from maybe some embarrassment for ignoring them, you may also feel awkward. Whereas if you just replied and said no to their requests, it may still be a bit awkward when you meet, but nothing compared to what it looks like with you scrambling for reasons as to why you haven't been on your phone for the past 4 weeks or so. If you handle the business at hand instantly, no matter how painful, it could save a lot of people from entering the dreadful territory of kicking the can down the road.
Today I don't feel like doing anything. I just wanna lay in my bed. Don't feel like picking up my phone, so leave a message at the tone. 'Cause today I swear I'm not doing anything.
Being lazy is so easy when we take a second to think about it deeply. How easy is it to stay in bed while your alarm is ringing? How easy is it to leave your deadline until the last possible second so you can enjoy the rest of your holidays? And how easy is it to ignore that annoying family member texting you every day? It's so easy. It's comforting. It's our default choice, if you may. And anything that threatens that comfort, such as doing what you're meant to do, our body rejects it immediately. It's as though we have to take our brains to the mental gym of understanding that there are things we need to get done. We need to grow our muscles to make it easier for us to do things. However, the hard part of building up your brain muscles is that you have to continually do things you don't want to do. I'm not telling you things you don't already know, but sometimes that's how it is when you kick the can down the road. It's like a form of ignored repetition. You have to stop kicking the can down the road, pick it up, and do something with it. Like I said, it's difficult, but every time we do it, it makes it a little bit easier for us to do the next time. And like anything, you don't have to start big. You can start by picking up small cans, so the bigger cans won't be as heavy for us to pick up. What we don't want is for it to become a habit, where kicking the can down the road is something we do with everything, big or small. When procrastination becomes second nature to us, it opens up a whole new can of worms that we didn't originally sign up for. When we become known for being procrastinators and essentially being untrustworthy with things, it can damage our reputation big time. Reputation is such an important thing for us, whether consciously or unconsciously. We behave a certain way to either improve our reputation or maintain our good one. The international best-selling book called The 48 Laws of Power, although it's mainly satire, has certain unironic little gems. One of them that stood out for me was Law 5. So much depends on reputation, guard it with your life. Imagine being known as the person who can't be trusted with things, so nobody leaves anything as your responsibility. Now, that sounds great when you're younger. It might even sound great to adults, but being known as someone who doesn't know how to get things done when you're older will sadly make people view it in a lesser light. The gift and curse of a reputation comes in the fact that it sticks for a long time, and if you want to break a negative stigma, it takes a very long time, if ever. It's like being back in school when the kid who had one bad day during PE gets picked last for every sports team going forward. And no matter how good they play, they'll always be known as being subpar at PE just because of that one bad day.
I'm procrastinating. All day I sit here waiting for just a perfect moment to begin.
We're always just waiting for the right time to arise and do what we have to do. And this part of the show is going to sound like a long moan. We often say to ourselves, after this one video, I'll get going. Or one last post and I'll be ready. When the truth is, we'll never be ready when we say that, because we'll never truly get to that final video. There will always be a video after that. That's more interesting than the previous one. It's to our detriment, but people are good at the internet. Their job is to keep us hooked. And as a collective, everyone who uploads some sort of content onto the internet does amazing at it. Screen time percentages are at an all-time high and always on the rise. And it's ironic because the people creating content for us have to break out the state of not kicking the can down the road with the hope of their audience not doing what they need to do. It's a vicious cycle. The point is, there is never going to be a right time to do anything, and it's never going to feel right to stop kicking the can down the road. It's sad but true, because it's too easy to kick the can down the road. It's much more of a chore to pick it up and do something with it. And our bodies don't like chores. But we have to realise that it's okay to do things we don't want to do. Just do it anyway. Tyrese Okwuachi, writer of today's episode, speaks about how his mom used to tell him about a Simpsons episode where Homer didn't want to do something until he was visited by future Homer, who was upset with him for not doing what he needed to do in the present because it affected him in the future. Perhaps we could take a similar approach where, just when we're about to start kicking that procrastination can down the road, we think about how it's going to make our future selves feel, and maybe that will be good enough motivation for us.
So pretend you're this guy, and you were really productive earlier in the month. In fact, you were kind of killing it. You're reading lots of books, hitting the gym consistently, and actually getting your work in on time. But then something happened. Maybe you woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Maybe an invisible demon ghost violated you in your sleep. Whatever the case may be, everything seems just a bit harder to do. You're tired. You've lost all the motivation you had to keep being awesome, and you can't even remember why you were being productive in the first place. And that mental clarity that you seemed to be the beneficiary of just yesterday seems to have ran away in the night. And unfortunately, this lack of motivation starts to seep into the other areas of your life. The thought dawns on you to go to the gym and you're too lazy to do it. So you skip the gym that day, one day turns into 2 days, 2 days turns into a week. You're also starting to buy more junk food, watch more TV, play more video games. And not only are you not doing the things you know you should be doing, but you don't even want to. You can't even remember why you were being productive in the first place.
We all slip up, and we can all fall into a loophole of wrong decisions, where one week we're flying in terms of productivity, and then we could just go onto our phone for 30 minutes longer than we should, and it can easily lead to a spiral of procrastination. We end up worse off than how we started. It happens. It's human nature to be fickle. We never really stick to something with the same passion we once had. We always want to do something else or go back to something we know. But what we can do to avoid this occurring is limit our compromises. What I found out with compromising is that it always starts small. There's never a time where you compromise a big thing because you'd never want to do it if it's going to harm you. However, when it's small, things that don't feel that bad in the moment, that's when it leads to the bigger things that are bad for you, and you won't even notice how you got there. For example, you could be on a strict diet where you're not drinking any other fluids but water for a week. Your body could then tempt you with having flavored water. And because it has water in its name, you might say, why not? But the real truth is that it's not water. And once you get the taste of that flavored water, your body might tempt you with lemonade with no added sugar. Why? Because what's the big deal? It has no sugar. But it is a big deal because now you aren't even drinking something that has water in its name. And then your body could test the waters again by asking, why not have some Coke Zero? And you agree because you've already passed the threshold of not drinking water when you had the lemonade. So you start the week saying you're only drinking water, and by the end of the week, you're drinking Coke. And it all started with that first compromise of drinking flavored water. You get it, right? It's the same with procrastination. When we set out productive goals for ourselves to achieve, we can't compromise even a little bit, because before we know it, we'll be back on that lazy road kicking that heavy can. One of the best Bible verses out there that actually can help with this very predicament of falling into a rut is found in Proverbs 24, verse 16. For though the righteous fall seven times, they rise again. And we fall, we all miss our mark sometimes. But we mustn't stay down. We must get up and keep going. One small step every day is better than no steps in one day.
So let's talk a little bit about procrastination. Who in here struggles with procrastination? Yeah, and the rest of you that aren't raising your hand are just procrastinating on doing it, aren't you? I know. You see, I always thought procrastination had to do with the thing I was procrastinating around, right? Like that procrastination has something to do with work. Believe it or not, procrastination has nothing to do with your work. Procrastination is a form of stress relief. Let me explain this. So let's say that you've got some stuff going on in your life, and heck, who doesn't have stuff going on in your life? Maybe you're fighting with your significant other. Maybe mom's or dad's health is failing and it's really, really upsetting you. Maybe you've got some financial stuff. You put too much of your savings into Bitcoin and now that that's crashed, you're stressed out about it, right? And so you go into work, and when you get into work, you got stuff to do, you kind of walk in and you got this big stress ball that subconsciously is hanging over your head. And so you walk in and you sit down and you know you got 13 phone calls you need to make. And you also know that you've been chickening out, you've been making easy calls, and there's a bunch of CIOs or other people that are higher level that you haven't been calling. And so as you sit down to do it, and you got the stress on your shoulders, your brain, it starts to go, wait a minute, well, you want me to make a call to somebody that I'm scared to make? Absolutely not. I'm so stressed out about, can we just watch some cat videos for a minute? And next thing you know, an hour's gone by. And then, of course, what do? You beat yourself up. So the only way that you can break this habit, and that's an important word for you to hear, you're not a procrastinator. You have a habit of procrastinating. Big difference. Because if it's a habit, I can teach you to use science to break it. You see, all habits have three parts. There's a trigger, and in the case of procrastination, the trigger's always stress. Then there's a pattern you repeat, and in the case of procrastination, it is to avoid doing something. And then there's a reward. You get a little stress relief. The only way to break a habit, you guys, is not to deal with the triggers. You're never gonna get rid of the stress in your life. But you can 100% change your pattern of avoiding work. So next time that you're in a situation where you feel yourself hesitate, you spent way too much time checking out the highlights from last night's scores, what you're going to do is you're going to go, oh, I must be stressed out about something. Acknowledge the stress. Then go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I want you to count to yourself because I want you to interrupt the habit that's stored here, and I want you to awaken your prefrontal cortex. Then I want you to just work. Just for 5 minutes. The reason why I want you to only work for 5 minutes is because your problem isn't working. It's the habit of avoiding. I just need you to start. And here's the other cool thing. We know based on research that if we can get you to start, 80% of you are going to keep going.
Human beings are avoidant. When things are too hard for us, we go into our shell and hide and use whatever form of escapism we have and immerse ourselves in it until the problem we're running from goes away. But it never does as long as we don't address it. As with most things, it's fear that prevents us from moving forward, especially when there is an urgent issue we have at home. We look for any excuse to go outside. We want reasons not to do the things we ought to because we're afraid of it, so we run away. Essentially, when you kick the can down the road, you're running away from your tasks at hand. Imagine somebody on a road kicking the can, and surrounding them is the whole world falling apart, but they act oblivious to it by continuing to kick the can. That's a representation of what happens when we ignore things. Whenever anyone asks about fight or flight, I almost feel that everyone's answer should be flight, because whether in a literal sense or not, we have that nature to run away from our real problems and cope using something else. Lolette Hudson is the inventor of the critically acclaimed Things Mama Used to Say, a 52-card box set of Jamaican Caribbean proverbs to facilitate change movement, build inclusive leaders, diversity, inclusion, culture humility, and develop high-performing teams. She also created the annual Common Ties event in its 13th year that brings over 200 people annually together to share lived experiences and celebrate African-Caribbean cultural pride and resilience. Her pioneering approach to entrepreneurship has resulted in her winning the Silver Award of the prestigious British Female Inventors and Innovators Awards. She is a Sherry Blair Business Mentor and Branson Center of Entrepreneurship Caribbean Business Mentor. Lolette, thank you once again for joining us on Metaphorically Speaking. It's so wonderful to have you again.
Thank you.
Well, we have a very, I was going to say unusual, but maybe unusual isn't the right word. Maybe it's one that's not said very often, but to me, it does have different meanings that could either encourage or make someone do some certain things without actually realizing that they're doing it. What does that metaphor bring to light for you to kick the can down the road?
In terms of Caribbean, you would say somebody who is skylarking, meaning they are just wasting time, really. But if you look at it from the perspective of an English perspective, it means that you're postponing something. You're not really dealing with the problem, not doing anything about it. So you're kicking the can and hoping that something will happen instead of solving the problem. It's really sitting on it.
Does that happen to you?
In many times, I know I'm supposed to do something. It might be having to make a very uncomfortable phone call. I'll do everything else apart from making the phone call, hoping that I don't have to deal with it.
When I first heard this metaphor, the first image that came to my mind was when I was younger, when I used to walk to school, or when I used to walk somewhere that I didn't really want to go to. Not to say that I didn't want to go to school, but there were times when I didn't want to go somewhere and I would take anything that I saw on the pavement, most probably a stone. I'd see a stone more than I'd see a can, and I would kick it, purposely kick it. You know, like a game of football. You lost the stone, then you find another one, or depending on where it falls, you might pick up the stone and put it back on the path. And a vision came to me, a memory of how that actually started. My parents come from St. Lucia. My father, he's like Rudolph Walker, very kind of dark skin. And my mother is very, very light, very fair. You know, in the Caribbean, they call them, in St. Lucia, they call them shabin. And she was so light that when it was cold, sometimes you could see the green of her veins through her skin. That's how pale she was. And I remember sometimes when I used to go to school, when my mom used to take me to the gates, the children, you know, they'd laugh and everything. And I didn't find out what it was until someone actually said it out loud. Oh, your mother love a nigger man. That is when I started kicking that stone when I was going to school. And it's amazing how certain metaphors bring to light
a story or something that's happened in shorter words. It was the first thing that I thought of. And then I started thinking, well, what did I start doing that? And it kind of brought back those kind of memories. Can you see that? Can you see the reason why that would happen?
Definitely. As human being and as a coach myself, the reason why people don't do what they know they're supposed to do, because there's a level of uncomfortable. So people procrastinate. They don't like doing it. So they procrastinate, hoping it will go away. So they put it off and put it off and put it off. And it's that uncomfortable way of being. If I don't have to deal with it, then I'm not going to deal with it. So listening to you with your story about what the children were actually saying, of course you're going to put off going to school because it's the experience you're going to have when you get there. You're not feeling embraced. And also there's a level of shame attached to it as well. A lot of people are so scared of failing that they really don't attempt the very same things that they want to do because that shame attached to failing, even not having the money to pay the things that you want to do at the level like you want to. And so people procrastinate instead of really taking an action.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not sure whether shame is the right word for me. I can see why it could fit into that context. I can't remember exactly how old I was. I must have been around maybe 7 or 8. And I don't know why my mom wasn't with me on that day, because she always took me to school. But school was very close. It was only 30 or 40 doors away. And I don't remember. There must have been an adult. Maybe my best friend's mom used to walk us to school sometimes. So maybe she was behind me. I don't really remember. But at that age, at that time, I think in a way I was so isolated from what racism was about, because my parents, it was always from school, home. In the weekends, I'd go to my family. I wouldn't be playing out. I wouldn't be around other people apart from my immediate family. And so I never saw racism within my family. And even the people who weren't white who came to my home, I didn't see them as anything different than myself. Of course, I knew they were white skin. And in those days, we would say, oh, your skin isn't really white. Why do they call you white? And our skin isn't really black. Why do they call us black? I was more in that, like, well, you're pale and we're brown and that kind of thing, without thinking anything racist about it. But when you said shame, it made me think, I'm kicking this thing, trying not to get somewhere where I know I have to go. So yes, there's a form of procrastination there. And I'm saying this out loud because I'm thinking other people may have moments or episodes where they've kicked the can down the road and they're kind of wondering, why am I doing this? It's not just a matter of procrastination. Maybe it's a sense of, I wouldn't say not knowing where you're from. You feel alone, or you feel like you don't know who to talk to. So even though you may have something on your mind and you want to do something, you want a guide, you want someone to assist you, to help you. And if you've got that, you'd be able to deal with it. Maybe it is a sign of you want to go somewhere, but you don't know where to go to get that help.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sometimes we don't even recognize the emotions that certain things might happen, certain experience, bullying, anything. Sometimes domestic violence as well, or it could be in the workplace. And I can assure you there are lots of people who come Sunday night to go to work on a Monday. It is such a challenge because they really don't want to go into work and face the workplace because of the inequalities or whatever is going on in there with them. And I think even now, a lot of people being asked to go back into the workplace, they really don't want to. They'd rather things remain the way it is. So at the moment, there is a battle with either working from home or going back into the workplace. On the other hand, there are some people who would give anything to go back into the workplace, into the office, to avoid what's happening at home as well. They reckon during COVID, it was one of the most times for domestic violence. Going into work is an escape for some people. And for some people, it's avoidance.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Do you see any similarity between this metaphor to kick the can down the road and the previous metaphor you discussed with us, which was one hand can't clap?
Definitely, because one hand can't clap means, you know, you can't be courageous by yourself. You need support. You need infrastructure. You need people around you. My mission with the people who I coach is always, you know, make things happen with fun. Because when there's other people around, there's fun, there's excitement, there's adventure, there's curiosity, and you can bounce off each other. And for me, I don't work very well on my own. It's always great to have somebody to share it with. And that whole thing around procrastination, when it's just me by myself, it's easier to watch the television or to distract myself. But if I have somebody that holds me accountable, then I will take the action. And I think kicking the can, if you have a problem and you basically are on your own, then it's quite easy to procrastinate or to put it off and not do it.
I totally agree with you. But Lola, you said earlier that you coach, and I know you do so many other things. You've invented something that you can try to encourage or entice yourself to know yourself a bit better. Can you tell us more about what you're up to?
Yes, this whole conversation tied in very nicely with what I do. I was working with a group of 20 black boys that was disengaged from education. I use proverbs, which is very similar to this metaphor, things that my grandmother used to tell me to empower them, to get them to look at their culture. It's all around cultural intelligence. So many of us have been brought up by these proverbs, but we didn't know what they meant. And, you know, there was shame attached to it as well, because, you know, it's not standard English. And so because of that, we have to look historically around why languages were created, you know, why people create the language to thrive. If you're in a certain environment, and I think they use it in America as code switching, because when you're at home, you speak one way, and when you're in corporate, you speak another way. And so to remove that shame, I teach these young people, these young boys, how to really value and understand what these proverbs meant. So, for example, you know, if you can't hear, you feel, was very much a very popular proverb that we were brought up on. And, you know, again, it was how it was interpreted. You know, if you can't hear, you feel, it just mean if you don't listen to advice when given, then there's be consequences. But because sometimes it's how it's said, and we have to look at why it was communicated that way, you know, from as far as and the plantation. You know, our languages were taken away from us. And if we were caught using it, our ancestors were caught using it, then what would happen is, you know, you'd be beaten and, you know, there'd be shame attached to it. And even today, you know, some parents still say to their children, don't use the proverbs and don't use the Creole, don't use the patois. And so there is some people who, again, don't use it because they felt the shame attached to it. So in order to really enable people to understand the power of our language and how empowering it is, I created a box of 52 proverbs, things Mama used to say, and put them into a box, which enable us to really understand what they really meant, why were they created, and, you know, that they are, how many years? Yeah, they're 20 years old this year. And I've sold 23,000 copies. When I first decided that I wanted to do them, you know, so many people tell me, don't, because they're too black again, you know, because they are not standard English. But if we don't value what is really ours, and they are a survival language that's been handed down throughout the generation, then we lose our identity. We lose what is really ours, and always, you know, performing under the context of other people and not what really makes us great.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're saying that, I was thinking of a couple of things, and I'm sure that that goes through the Caribbean islands. The fact that we are, even within the Caribbean, we are losing a lot of our culture because the older people who could teach it to the younger generation are no longer with us. And the younger people are not as interested as previous generations to keep the culture going. So a good example is some of the foods that we cook. You know, even the chefs, they don't cook it the same way that it was originally meant to be cooked. And I'm not talking about just the microwaves, you know.
Yeah.
They even in the coal pot, they may not cook it the same way that it was cooked. They may wrap it in foil instead of wrapping it in banana leaves. And it seems that we take it for granted, you know, that, oh, this is how something's supposed to taste, but that's not how it was originally meant. And also, I know in St. Lucia, we have musical festivals, and the musical festivals are after the saints most of the time, or sometimes they're musical festivals to do with flowers, the La Marguerite, and you have everyone dressing in the, you know, in the cultural tradition, and, you know, you have the traditional equipment, musical instruments. I know in St. Lucia there's been a conscious effort to try and get the younger people to be involved, but it's slowly dying, and it's so sad, I think. And, you know, you spoke earlier about the actual language. It's one of the things that my dad, you know, used to say to me, well, I should say says to me, he hasn't said it in a little while, but about 10 years ago, there was a time when he kept saying, one thing I regret is that I didn't let you know, my children speak the Creole language. Because when we were growing up, we grew up in England, and we did hear the culture because, you know, we had family. You know, we'd go to family on Sundays and they'd speak the Creole, the patois. And he would say, I don't want you all to learn that because it's not proper English. Yeah. And now he says to me, if there's one thing I regret, that I didn't allow, you know, I didn't encourage you to speak the language. And although that we understand it, we don't speak it. But it's very frustrating for me as an adult to understand some of the language, but cannot open my mouth to speak it as fluently as I would like to. But that's because I was discouraged earlier in life.
And if you look at this whole cultural intelligence, you know, right now it's been taught in Cambridge and all these different institutions. Because as a leader in any corporation, you need to understand cultural intelligence and recognizing that no language is better than the other, and also being able to relate to what people are actually communicating. So, yeah, it's important to understand the power of language and how it's used, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, definitely. Where do your ancestors come from?
We come from different parts of Africa. I haven't done my gene tests or anything, but, you know, definitely from the Maroons. And understanding, and even now, if you go to Jamaica in the Maroon village, they've still got the traditional way of doing many, many, many things and try and keep it alive. Because, you know, this is what I say to people. When you have something of value and you turn up in a meeting or in a space, it gives you courage, it gives you confidence. You know, to be able to, I took a group of 8 people to Jamaica to give them an experience of understanding what it takes in order to be highly competitive as a business owner. Because when you look at, you know, the great leaders, Marcus Garvey and all the great pioneers that came out of Jamaica, you know, Usain Bolt, you know, there is something about being competitive. And even in the education system in Jamaica, it's about being competitive. You know, there's a level of competitiveness, unlike in Britain, where you just go through the system. You know that without a good education in Jamaica and the rest of the Caribbean as well, because it's very much in the DNA, you have to compete and understand your value. Know your strength, know what you're about, and have a strong identity about who you are. And you can tell when somebody comes from the Caribbean to when somebody was born in the UK, there is a different kind of hunger, you know. And so it's about understanding your strength, you know, your values, your identity, and all of that come out of the culture. Culture is everything.
You know, you're so right, you know, you're so right. And I found that when I left St. Lucia as a young child as a young adult to return to the UK to continue my education, it what you said was so true. I had more of a passion. Although I was born in the UK and I did all my primary school in the UK, just the few years of secondary education that I got in the Caribbean, when I returned to continue my education in the UK, there was a fire in me. There was a, I wanted to understand more than the people who I had left behind. And when I met them again, they didn't have that fire for, I wouldn't say education solely, it was life. It was like they were just living from hand to mouth, just doing a particular job and not thinking of a career. Whereas I was coming from the Caribbean, coming back to my homeland, England, thinking, I want to make a career. I want to enjoy. I want to learn. And I think that it's, although that was many, many, many years ago, gosh, it must be, oh, I dread to think how long ago that was. You know, I do mentor university students from the UK. And so they, when they tell me and they explain certain things to me, I've been very lucky to get a good crop of young undergraduates and postgraduate students to mentor, and they're very headstrong. But if I have to be completely honest, I would say 3/4 of them have a Caribbean or African background. You know, they were either born in the UK from that parentage, or they weren't born in the UK and they've come to the UK and they're in to education. And those children, or young people, I should say, show more zest for their education. So you're completely right on that. Thank you so much for telling us what To Kick the Can Down the Road means to you, and how we can see it involved in our everyday life. And although it may sound more that it is a negative metaphor, I hope that people can see that maybe it's a positive thing to recognize that perhaps you may be doing that, so that you can try to reel it in, stop the procrastination, and talk to others so that they can assist you and support you to get to where you want to go quicker.
Most definitely. I mean, there's nothing like support. It's impossible to accomplish anything by yourself, or even any significance, you know, by yourself. We all need support. And one of the things that, especially with us Caribbean people, you know, we have not been encouraged to really seek that support at the level like we should do. I don't know why, you know, it seems a bit of a weakness to ask for help. And so we don't ask for help. And the only way we're gonna get to where we need to get to, we have to tap into other people. So I want to leave you with that. The importance of support, and One Hong Kong Club is that. It's a community, and surround yourself with the right people if you want to get ahead. And I think there's an African proverb, if you want to go fast, you go by yourself. And if you want to go far, you go with other people, you take other people with you.
Thank you so much once again, Lolet. Happiness, everything my life, no stress, fine boy, no ex. We tend to forget how great we feel after completing a task we needed to. The feeling is unmatched. We walk with an extra pep in our step because we've lifted one of the many weights we have off our shoulders. And due to this, we gain some much needed respite. This amazing book was born to tackle the epidemic of procrastination, and it's called Eat That Frog. The unique phrase is all about doing the most difficult task you have to do first and foremost. Essentially, if you had the horrible task of eating a whole frog, you might as well do it early in the morning before you do anything else. I love the phrase because it doesn't pretend doing the tasks are simple or enjoyable. Comparing them to the eating of a frog is spot on. Maybe in terms of how much we detest doing these things, we seem to fall into the trap of out of sight, out of mind, and hope if we leave something long enough, it will clean itself up. I wish this was true, but it's simply not the case. If we have plates to wash and we put off washing them for the entire day, the plates we avoided aren't just going to vanish because we've ignored them. There will probably be even more plates for us to handle later on. So why not prevent this by eating the frog early in the morning?
Why don't you give up and go tell them what's going on so they can help us?
No, you do it.
No way!
Ah, fine.
What's the holdup?
Look, I have to tell you the truth. I have a condition that makes me forget everything in times of extreme stress. Lieutenant Riggs doesn't have the condition. He's just an idiot.
On the surface, Regular Show is a cartoon that focuses on two people who go on insanely dangerous adventures. But when you scratch the surface, you realize that it's about two people who embody the phrase of kicking the can down the road and all the trouble it gets them in. Almost all the problems in that show are about how Mordecai and Rigby, not doing their work as they're told, causes them to embark on life-threatening journeys that more consequently always leave them on the brink of the sack. To a much smaller degree, this is how it is for us. Our slacking off can lead to greater troubles, which can be life-changing. It's never our intention to suffer the heap of problems that come with leaving things last minute. But the reality is that issues will always arise when we let matters fester for too long. Imagine how different we would behave if we could go into the future, to the end of that road you're kicking the can down, and see the consequences of it. That would save us a lot of time wasted. Who would have thought that what starts as an innocent form of leisure could turn into a huge bill of prices to pay? We certainly don't think it will, considering how much we do it. But the truth is, when we procrastinate, whether in a big or small way, it always has ramifications in our lives. It can range from something as small as getting marked down on an assignment to as big as ruining a relationship or missing a life-changing opportunity.
So you listen to me and you listen well. Are you behind on your credit card bills? Good, pick up the phone and start dialing. Is your landlord ready to evict you? Good, pick up the phone and start dialing.
Whether we think there are less important things we want to do, you should do the more pivotal thing first before anything else. Do you really think it's okay to want to sleep in an extra 10 minutes, even when you know it's going to quickly turn into an hour? Why not think about all the setbacks and results if you don't start that 5,000-word dissertation? One of the scariest things about time is that it doesn't stop. No matter what happens in the world, no matter how groundbreaking, even events that make the world stop still don't stop time. As time goes by, things that we leave waiting for progress will remain static. If we sit up and work, then they will progress for the better, toward completion. Whereas if we leave it, it will progress to a worse scenario for us. We all dream and we all fantasize. Some people have a whole different reality in their minds that completely opposes the life they currently live. The mind can be a beautiful playground. Fantasizing is a normal thing and it coincides with the method of escapism. The problem arises when our fantasy begins to take over to the point where we're so engraved in it that we don't move forward in our real lives. We all have dreams we want to achieve and goals we want to accomplish. But when we get caught up in imagining that perfect lifestyle, it can trick us into thinking we're already there. And instead of working to get there, we'd rather sit and dream about it because, again, it's much easier. But when you overdo it, you don't take the necessary steps to get there and end up missing that opportunity.
Look who we are. We are the dreamers. We make it happen. Guess we believe it. Look who we are. We are the dreamers.
We all kick the can down the road from time to time, whether we like it or not, and whether we are conscious that we are doing it or not. When we kick the can down the road, it's possible that the path, decision, or action is uncomfortable, or that a person is not ready to face a decision. But if you take note of the direction the can follows, kicking it can help you decide where it may lead. There's a time for everything, and we shouldn't get so caught up in kicking that we forget there are more pressing matters for us to attend to. Thank you for tuning in and listening to this episode of Metaphorically Speaking. I hope you enjoyed it and hope it was thought-provoking enough for you to return. We'd love you to share the episode with your family and friends, and don't hesitate to leave a review on colorful.com or on our podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, which is on Apple, Spotify, and all streaming platforms. If you'd like to suggest a metaphor for an upcoming show, you can reach us at info@metaphoricallyspeaking.uk. Join us for another metaphor next week. Until then, I'm Delia Delore. Goodbye.
More R&B classics coming up on the Colorful Radio. No regular, regular. No. Put it for real, I'm pretty from my cellular. No. No, say it hot. No.
They never had a pretty girl from Joburg to me now, and that's what they prefer. I don't touch no wheel, cause I got a chauffeur. First class, how I get around the world. Just miss me with the drama, unless you call me with the commas. Or DJ turn the sound up, cause we about to pour the rounds up. From Jersey to Ibiza, they say it doesn't get sweeter. Feel my body banging like speaker. Ooh, sweating on my concealer. Skin tight, no millimeter. And my face can't make him feel weaker. But you know that my body is a healer. Ooh, I love to make it jump, 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 jump. Oh, you know I love to make it jump, jump, jump. Dump, 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 back it top, top. You know I love to make it jump, 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 jump. You know I love to make it jump, jump, jump. Dum, 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 back it top, top. You know I love to make it.
Only gotta make a call and I'm here. Gonna wanna know your vibe, oh yeah. Listen to me, I put some carrots in your ear. Make this stitch up, I wanna put it in the ring. Wanna give D, I serve it like a dealer. Creeping out though, when I'm digging in the middle. I'm back in your bird, it can feel no realer. Help her re-pitch in a part of art. She a trophy, you know what? Pips feet feeling like a sirloin. Told her show, but take it, she's a nest up. Have a play with you, be a war war.
From Jersey to Ibiza, they say it doesn't get sweeter. Feel my body banging like speaker. Ooh, sweating on my concealer. Skin tight, no millimeter. And my face can't make him feel weaker. But you know that my body is a healer. Ooh, I love to make it jump, 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 jump. Ooh, you know I love to make it jump, jump, jump. Dum, 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 back it top, top. You know I love to make it jump, 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 jump. Oh, you know I love to make it jump, jump, jump. Dum, 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 back it top, top. You know I love to make it.
Original, girl, you want a replica?
No.
Smoothie, no regular, degular.
No.
Pretty for real, I'm pretty for my cellular.
No.
You know, say you're hot.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, you and I tune in.
It's a Dempsey beat.
Introducing
Rogers. I've got a chick. She gon' make me tip. I love that cheek. Girl, you gon' make me tip. We goin' up on a Wednesday. Drop the cutty like a sensei. We goin' up on a Wednesday. Is you gon' let me in, babe? Like a sensei, we going up on a Wednesday. Is you gonna let me in, babe?
I'ma make that cookie sit.
put your hands on your hips. When I see that from the back,
I'll be like, thank you, Lord. I'll throw my hands up. I'll be like, thank you, Lord. I'll throw these bands up.
Girl, you like a nasty. So bougie but ratchet. Girl, you like a nasty. Keep twerking it fast, please. I love that cheek.
She gon' make me tip.
She gon' make me tip. I love that cheek.
She gon' make me tip.
Girl, you gon' make me tip. We going up on a Wednesday. Drop the cutty like a sensei. We going up on a Wednesday. Is you gon' let me?
DJ Clue, get the storm.
Y'all know what this is. So bob your heads. Yeah. Ladies, it's your boyfriend,
the Pied Piper.
And Miss Johnson.
F-A-B-O.
Yeah. Woo. We mixing drinks right now, y'all.
Come on.
I step up in the spot and all the heads turn. Pull up in the green apple beam. Your boy's so hot, the club, it might burn. Fresh linen suit, walking with lean. Like brass knuckles on my fist, ain't it, man? Like sun shining on my wrist, ain't it, man? I'm like a pimp with a twist, hypnotic with the crisp. Fuck with models with the hips, what's the name? Canary yellow ice came with the change. Just like money, cars, and clothes came with the fame. Just like big pimping, y'all drew all of these hoes. Just like that's why I'm in the club popping all these bottles tonight.
Boy, you got that crazy magic formula, and I can't shake it, babe. Just wanna drink it, babe. And I stay hungry for your love. You keep me wanting, babe. Wanna eat it up, tell me what.
That's so addictive that I lose control.
It feels so good, I had to ask the question.
What is this
that got me feeling?
Easy to let go.
Oh, baby, your love is so
hypnotic, so hypnotic.
Your love is so.
Hypnotic,
your love is so. Can't seem to run, can't seem to hide. Cause your love keeps finding me. It's that chemistry between us. Ooh, boy, you're all off up inside.
Oh,
I'm loving every moment.
Oh,
so why you had to go on and blow my mind? What is this that's so addictive? It feels so good that I had to ask myself, oh, what is this that's got me feeling? Oh, I can't seem to let go. Oh, boy, cause your love is so. Your love is. Your love is so.
Young Money on the floor.
You touch me,
on a connection to the shop.
I'm forever your lady.
What it is.
Cause you are.